Thank you, Stephen. And I really appreciate the fact that you mentioned the Millennial Ecosystem Report and Ecosystem Services, because I'm making an assumption in this talk that people know what ecosystem services are. I'm not going to spend a lot of time giving background on ecosystem services, discussing what the issues are. The Millennial Ecosystem Report that he referred to is really the landmark publication, and anybody who's not familiar with the concept, I do encourage you to please look at that. I'm going to talk about a specific project today. In particular, one of the things that has emerged from the ecosystem service concept, it really grew out of early efforts to actually place values on ecosystem services, monetary values on nature services. And one of the issues we have, one of the problems we have, is that a lot of these services, a lot of the things we get from nature are not inside our market economy. So we treat them as externalities. I'm not an economist, I'm an ecologist, so I'm not going to go into the economics that I don't understand, but they're treated as externalities. And one of the things people have been trying to do is place this value that has led to this concept that if we can put a value on it, maybe we can pay for it. And so that has led to the creation of several attempts internationally, both within this country and elsewhere in the world, to develop programs that would pay people, particularly paying agricultural landowners or land managers to provide these services. And of course, we have a lot of programs here in the U.S. at the USDA, the Conservation Reserve, the Wetland Reserve Program. We have all kinds of incentives that we put in place to encourage agricultural landowners or managers to implement more environmentally friendly practices. And in a sense, those are programs that provide financial resources to produce ecosystem services. The difference between those services and a payment for ecosystem services program is that they are prescriptive. And a payment for ecosystem services program is designed around the concept of actually paying for a documented amount of services. In other words, treating the service more like a fungible commodity, something that can be traded, something that can be bought and sold. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about today, a case study of our specific efforts in Florida to develop such a program on Florida ranch lands. Simple concept. Florida ranches provide ecosystem services beyond the production of beef cattle. Florida's the 12th largest producer of beef in the United States. It's all cow-calf operations. The Central Florida region has about 1 million acres of ranchlands, and there's a lot more that those ranchlands provide than beef. And shown here is a beautiful semi-native pasture. Clearly, it looks like good wildlife habitat and provides a lot of other services. What are those services? Well, wildlife habitat is one key service. Here we have pictured the burrowing owl, the wood stork, the crested caracara, all flagship wildlife species that occur on Florida ranches, and all of which share a common feature in that in one way or another they're on a list somewhere as a threatened species, either federal or state. This is a map of Florida showing you the distribution of threatened and endangered species in Florida. The gray, the blocked out gray areas, excuse me, are conservation, federal or state conservation lands, and everywhere else you see the red or yellow for endangered and threatened species are the distribution of those organisms on private lands in Florida. So clearly you can see what we do on private lands is key to the conservation of those species. And if you look at where our major beef cattle producing area is in Florida, you will see there's a tremendous overlap in the south central part of the state where our rangelands are concentrated and the distribution of those species. So clearly there's a service, the importance of the wildlife habitat. Right now there are programs to encourage that, but there's not a lot of people paying for crested caracaras in the state of Florida or burrowing owls. Another big issue is water. That's our biggest issue. That's what drives most of the environmental issues in Florida, and it's where most of the money is. And one of the things I'm going to emphasize today, if you want to pay for ecosystem services, you need two things. Well, you need lots of things, as you're going to find out, but two of the things you need is a buyer and a seller. And for there to be a buyer, there has to be money on the table. And what I'm going to focus on today and talk about, there's a lot of money on the table, a lot of money being spent to get services out of this landscape, primarily public money through the state agencies. And most of that's due to the water issues. This is the South Florida ecosystem showing from the top of that red banded area, Orlando, all the way down to the tip. I don't know if I have a pointer here. I don't think I do. South part of the state, we have the Everglades. And all the way up to Orlando, that's the greater Everglades ecosystem. That is the subject of what up to this point is perhaps the largest ecosystem restoration program in dollar terms in the world. And right now, it was started out at $8 billion. The current estimate is $22 billion to get the restoration program implemented. We have the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program, and in the northern part of the watershed, outlined there in red, which is the watershed for Lake Okeechobee, there's a lot of issues. One of the big issues is phosphorus. What this graph shows you is the five-year rolling average of phosphorus loads, total loading into the lake, around 500 metric tons. And because that lake has been identified by the US EPA as an impaired waterway, the legislature of Florida was required to establish a TMDL. I'm sure most people in the audience are familiar with the TMDL process. And you can see that the target, which probably more realistically would be 2115, even if that's realistic, is to reduce the phosphorus loads by 75%. And I want to remind everybody, it's not as though we haven't been doing anything in Florida. We have programs in place for the past 30 years to reduce phosphorus into Lake Okeechobee. And as you can see, the average line hasn't budged very much. So what this has created is a tremendous amount of demand for water services, a tremendous amount of demand and a tremendous amount of money. Just in the Northern Everglades ecosystem where I work, the projects currently on slate are estimated to cost $220 million just for those set of projects. So there's a lot of money. Again, that represents a public demand and a source of dollars. And we argue that although the public works projects that are being planned are necessary, that in fact there are things private landowners can do. And so we suggest that we take this resource of money and have a system where we could have transactions that pay the private landowner over here who can provide some of those services with some of that fund. So we're trying to link the buyer and the seller. So the services we're talking about in particular are water storage and nutrient retention. I put quotes around storage because, yes, we want to store it. Store usually implies you can keep it and then you can give it back. In this case, the agencies are very interested in keeping water out of the lake in the wet season when a lot of the load comes into the lake, a lot of the nutrient load and water. They just don't want to see the water. It could go to evapotranspiration. It could seep into groundwater. The key is it's not getting into the surface runoff, surface waterways. So that's water storage. And they want it in that upper watershed before it gets to Lake Okeechobee, before it ends up going south of the lake to the Everglades and everywhere else. And part of that also is to retain the nutrients that would otherwise leave a non-point source pollution with the consequences of eutrophication downstream in Lake Okeechobee and other waterways. And right now, the EPA is in Florida establishing nutrient numeric criteria for nutrient concentrations for every ditch, tributary, drainage way in Florida. So we're right in the middle of a lot of really serious policy relevant issues related to this. So these are the two services that are in high demand. There's a lot of money on the table to get them. And that led to the formation of this unique grassroots stakeholder effort to pay ranchers to provide some of these services. It's called the Florida Ranchlands Environmental Services Project. We published a paper in Frontiers of Ecology and the Environment earlier this year. If you're interested, I can give you that link. The acronym is FRESP, and the idea is simple. It was built out of a stakeholder collaboration. In the middle there, in the red shirt, is Sarah Lynch, who's the Program Director for Agriculture for the World Wildlife Fund. She started this process where she came to Florida, she met with ranchers, she pulled in researchers, University of Florida, what can we do to help ranchers or encourage them to do more environmentally friendly things? And it led it to a couple of USDA Conservation Innovation Grants, which were critical for our funding, matches from the state agencies. We got a lot of money to test this idea that ranchers could provide these services and get paid for it. Concept is simple. Ranchers can provide some of these services that I just pointed to you. And the concept is we'll pay them for the extra services they provide. So we won't pay them for what they're doing. We're going to ask them to produce above and beyond what a rancher would normally do, and create an incentive by paying them on the amount of the service that they provide. Simple concept, not so simple to implement. But our idea was, and with the Conservation Innovation Grant funding, what we said we would do is take that concept and apply it on the landscape. Let's get ranchers to implement what we call these water management alternatives on their lands, and then let's measure, because we don't really know what this service is, how much can be provided. We're not even sure what it's worth. We'll go and implement these and measure what the impact is, and then we'll be in a better position to say, how much does it cost? Is it worth it to the state to do it? Because if it costs just as much as it costs the state to buy land and build a reservoir, then there's really no reason to do it. So I'm giving you some examples here, just the types of things. We have a wetland restoration on one ranch where there's a 250-acre wetland draining 900 acres, putting in a culvert with a riser, reflooding that ground, so it's a water storage kind of project. We have another ranch, a very large ranch, that's a 2,500-acre marsh. What they've done at the one end is they've put in a pump where they're pumping water out of the regional canal, and the idea here is it will filter through their impoundment that they use for their citrus grove, and it would act as a nutrient filtration, kind of like a private STA. The water comes out the other end and discharges. So this project's more of a nutrient removal kind of project. Last year, it removed 3.2 metric tons of phosphorus from the regional waterways before returning the water. Another concept is something more like this. It's a pasture water management. A lot of this area in South Florida, it's heavily ditched to get drainage off the shallow water tables. So what we did is we put every red dot as a water control structure in the drainage ditches. And this rancher at Buck Island Ranch has agreed to hold the water up in the wet season when normally ranchers would be trying to get rid of it. The risk is I've got wet pastures, I've got more mosquitoes. It may hurt me, but if you pay me enough, I might be willing to do it. So he's currently in the pilot project getting paid to hold this water in the wet season. So we have wetland rehydration, pumping regional waters for nutrient filtration, storing water on pastures. And a key aspect of it, we're trying to quantify the service. Got a lot of environmental sensors out there. We've collected, 18 million data records on some water stage and hydrology and flow. So we're trying to really quantify what the service is in this pilot phase. And we're using that information also in conjunction with a model to estimate what the potential for the service is in the landscape. So this is a key aspect because we got to document the service so we know what it is. We have an idea of how much can be provided. Then we can talk about, whether this can be exchanged through some kind of market program. So quantifying the services is key. And again, the model we're building, the potential water retention model is being built by an engineering firm. The idea is they would then, if you were going to enter a contract, you would actually start by estimating how much service could you provide based on this model. And then the state could use that as a basis for assessing what is the potential for this particular project that's being proposed. Another question we get a lot is, well, what's it worth? And that's a very difficult question. Again, I'm not an economist. Economists work a lot on this in the conservation area. It's all about price discovery. What's it worth? One thing we can do is, how much does the public works projects cost? And we've now asked the district, the South Florida Water Management District, to tell us how much it costs them to store an acre foot of water and remove a pound of phosphorus. And they're currently engaged in estimating that. We can then, even if it's cost effective, the buyer has to be willing to pay. The agency's going to have to deal with private ranchers. There's going to be all these contracts. They have a program. They still have to be willing to do it. And the rancher has to be willing to play. There has to be a price at which they are willing to engage. So where is all this headed? Right now, the status of the project is the South Florida Water Management Board 2 weeks ago passed a resolution that they would adopt a program based on the FRESP concept starting next year that would pay, enter this process where they would pay private landowners to provide these services. So we've come a long way in 5 years, 6 years really, to get to this point, and it looks like we may have a program. The question is it going to operate the way we envisioned or not? But it does seem as though there's going to be some support for it publicly. So with that, leaving plenty of time for questions, I will thank you for your attention today. And we have a lot of supporters. I don't have the Kellogg Foundation on here. They actually contributed some money to this, the funding that has contributed to the success of this program. So thank you very much.
We have a few minutes for questions, so if you have questions.
Yes. Yes. That's an excellent question. And in fact, we're very interested in it. And from the outset, the World Wildlife Fund was very interested. Well, if you could have gone another one, that's fine. Is that we are very interested in that because we're wildlife funds, they try to encourage wildlife. What's it going to have an effect on wildlife? Is it going to be good or bad for wildlife? What about carbon sequestration? You start flooding areas, you're restoring wetlands, you're going to have consequences for carbon flows and fluxes. What about wildlife habitat? What about native plant communities? Very interesting point. The issue is what we focused on was what the money is being paid for right now. We're very interested in the other services. Now, we've got a grant submitted to an ecosystem services.